So we're going to start tonight, guys, because it will impact on our study of 8 with a very quick review, a very brief review of chapter 6, and just a sort of stated across the top. Chapter 6 is, we see the opening of the 6 seals, or the first 6 of the first 7 seals, the 7 seals. And we see 6 of them opened. And I think it's important for you to understand that what John is describing as seeing is not specific events, but overall events. He's seeing a panorama, if you will. When we get to chapter 8 and we begin to open the trumpet judgments, you'll start to see how that fills in the blanks. And becomes very specific as to what's happening. So that's chapter 6. These first 6 seals are opened, and then there's a pause. And chapter 7 and verse 1 says, "And after these things, after he saw these 6 seals, after these things, I saw 4 angels standing on the 4 corners of the earth, holding the 4 winds of the earth," winds being a picture of God's judgment, "that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. So, and I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God, and he cried with a loud voice to the 4 angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, until we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads." This angel ascending from the east says we just need to take a parenthesis in this. We need to take a pause in this. And the reason for the pause is we're going to collect 144,000 Jews from the 12 tribes of Israel. And right in their forehead, we're going to put a stamp that demonstrates Jehovah's ownership of those 144,000 servants. And their job will be to go out into all the world to preach the gospel and to do in 7 years what the church doesn't seem to have been able to accomplish in 2,000 years. And that will be their responsibility. And then we see from verse 9 and onwards, we see a whole bunch of symbolic pictures of the throne of God and what's going on around the throne of God. Then we come now to chapter 8. So remember, we've had there's seven seals. We've had 6 of them. There they are. There's 7 and we've had 6. Now John tells us we're going to open the 7th seal now. So chapter 8 and verse 1. "And when he had opened the 7th seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour." About the space of half an hour. This is the lull before the storm. This is a dramatic moment of heightened expectation of what is about to come. And there are other examples of this in the scripture, and I'll just give them to you. Psalm 46 and verse 10 is a good example. Job 4 and verse 16 is another good example. Of there being a heightened expectation generated by silence. If one of my kids had done something wrong, and they knew they had done something wrong, and they were waiting, for judgment to fall, the thing they hated the most was silence. Like, let's get the ball rolling here and you know, get the spanking out of the way, sort of thing. And that's what we're seeing here. There's this moment of just nothing, and this expectation is building of what it is that's about to follow. And in chapter 8, the first six verses in chapter 8 are not the trumpets themselves, not the trumpet judgments themselves, but an introduction to the trumpet judgments. And I think it's really important to understand the importance, the significance of trumpets, which of course were ram's horns, you understand. But they, the significance of trumpets in the nation of Israel. Remember, this is about Israel. It's not about the church here. This is about Israel. And let me just run through some of these with you. Trumpets were very preeminent in Israel's festivals and ceremonies. They were used for a call to assembly, particularly for war. If they blew the trumpet, they knew to come because there was an enemy that was approaching. They used trumpets to announce their new year. And of course, trumpets were used in the announcement of divine judgment. It's interesting that that they the trumpets become the instrument here of announcing the details of God's judgment to be poured out upon the earth. In verse 2, it says, "And I saw seven angels. I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets." Now, these seven angels are not mentioned previously. We're not able to connect these seven angels with any other of John's vision of angelic beings. So these are seven new angels, so to speak. Their identity is unknown, but they stand before the throne of God, and God hands to them a trumpet each. And each one of those trumpets is a string of judgments. And here they stand. And of course, up until now, they haven't attempted to do anything because they've been held back by this angel from the east. And he's holding them back from announcing their judgment while God puts his stamp on the forehead of the 144,000. It's another powerful expression that God never brings his judgment on his people. There's no example of this in the scriptures where God is going to judge the earth and he allows his people to go through that. He doesn't do that. And we see that same thing here. In verse 3, "And another angel came," another unknown angel came and stood at the altar. And this angel, and this is a really important point here, this angel is actually acting in the capacity of Jewish priesthood. And you'll see why that's the case in just a moment. This verse is preeminently about priestly service in the tabernacle of the temple. And another angel, verse 3, came and he stood at the altar, having a golden censer, and there was given unto him much incense. Somebody tell me, incense. What's that a picture of? Yeah, Matt. Prayers.
Prayers, yeah.
Yeah, good man. Well done. It's a picture of prayers. And so he's given unto him not just incense, but much incense, that he should offer it. And look at this. He should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. Now, you've heard me preach about this altar in heaven. And some theologians will tell you, oh, this is a little bit controversial, whether there really is actually an altar in heaven. Well, you know, the Bible here is pretty straightforward. It says that this angel was standing before the altar, and he comes and he offers these, he offers this incense, this all this incense and this sweet smelling incense goes up, and it seems to collect. The notion here, the idea of the language here, is it collects together, it gathers up all the prayers of all the saints over all the years and brings them up into the very face of God. That he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. This is the very altar that Jesus sprinkled his blood on. And the very altar that once that blood was sprinkled, that God said, I am propitiated there, as there will never be another sacrifice for sin. This is a once and for all done deal. And in verse 4, it says, and the smoke of the incense, which came from the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. Here is a wonderful verse of every prayer that's ever been offered. You know, did God answer my prayers? Did God hear that prayer? Etc., etc. And the Bible is telling us that this, the smoke of this, the incense that the angel offers, gathers together the prayers of the saints, and they ascend up before God right out of the angel's hand, who's holding this golden censer in his hand. And I want you to watch for the repeat. I want you to watch for the repeated word. We'll see if you can pick it out as we move along. And the angel took the censer when he had filled it with fire off the altar, and he cast it into the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. Amazing. Symbols of a catastrophe. Symbols of a genuine catastrophic series of events, which is about to occur. This is really an announcement. This is the opening of this this whole trumpet judgments here. And we see in verse 5 and in verse 6, we move down to verse 6 now, and the seven angels which had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. They prepared themselves to sound. And now we're going to see what happens when they start to blow their trumpet. Now, I want you to understand this. I'm going to give you a whole string of scriptures, so get your pens ready. The Jewish prophets, they understood that the miracles that God did in delivering the Jews from Egypt would be repeated in the future. And I'll give you some references there which will demonstrate that to you. Isaiah chapter 10, verses 22 to 25. Isaiah chapter 11. The great chapter on Jesus, the branch of the Davidic branch. So Isaiah 11, verses 12 to 16. Jeremiah, chapter 16, verses 14 to 15. And finally, Ezekiel, chapter 38. And verse 22. So these prophets knew, and they understood that these miracles that were done in Egypt are not just a one-off. God performed these miracles, and he's going to do it again. And we'll begin to see these miracles peel off one after the other as we make our way through these trumpet and vial judgments. And I'll point them out to you as we go along. So verse 7 says the first angel, so this is the first trumpet judgment. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth. And the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all the green grass was burnt up. I don't want you to be looking for natural phenomena. I was reading about the eruption of the volcano Thera in the Greek islands way back in 1573. And what actually happened was it erupted, and the sea just turned blood red all around it, for miles all around it. But the reason it did is because the seawater is hypersaline, and of course what spewed out was iron oxide. So you put iron oxide with salt water, and the whole thing just turns blood red. And in fact, iron is what makes human blood red. but look, I'm not looking for that sort of an explanation, because it's very simply says here that this is blood. And when you look up the Greek word, it means, and has no other meaning, human or animal blood. That's it. So what you see happening here in verse 7 is the angel blows his trumpet, and hail comes, and it's mingled with fire and blood. This is exactly the prophet Joel, in Joel chapter 2, this is exactly what he prophesied would happen. And here it is, right here. It's happening right here. This is the fulfillment of that prophecy. And in verse 8 it says, and the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood. Didn't just turn red. It became blood. Why do you think blood is so important in the judgment of God? It's not actually a trick question. It's a relatively easy theological question. Anybody want to hazard a guess? Lorraine, I can't hear you. You need to turn
a blood mind. Sacrifice?
Yes, very good. Yeah. Very good.
It always involved obedience and trust.
Mm-hmm. Right from the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve sinned and God sacrificed those animals to put skins around them, judgment has always been associated with blood. And here we see now that a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. As I said, a totally catastrophic event. And now the third angel steps up, and he sounds his trumpet and says, there fell a great star from heaven, burning, as it were, a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood. And many died in the waters because they were made bitter. Crikey. So we need to pick this apart for you a little bit here. There's quite a bit here to consider. Turn back to Exodus chapter 7 for me. Exodus chapter 7. And we'll see. I want to show you something here. Exodus chapter 7. I'm nearly there. Here we go. Go to verse 21 in Exodus 7. And it says, and this is God now performing a miracle. The first miracle under the hand of Moses. Stretch out your rod over the waters of the river, Moses. And verse 21, and the fish that were in the river died, and the river stank, and the Egyptians could not drink of the water of the river, and there was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. Blood, human or animal blood, everywhere. So the third angel, verse 10, the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. Now, by now, you should have picked up what the common theme of this is. Anybody see it? No? Yeah, Delise.
A third. It seems to be patterns of thirds. Is that correct?
Okay, a pattern of third is there. That's true. It's not what I had in mind, but nevertheless, that's correct. Is there part of the judgment? As part of the judgment, you know what it is? It's the word fire. It's in the first trumpet, it's in the second trumpet, and now here it is in the third trumpet, and you'll see something quite different in the fourth trumpet. But for these first three trumpets, this star fell from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. When a heavenly body of some kind, be it a comet or a meteor or whatever, when it enters the Earth's atmosphere, it burns white hot. You know, it's thousands of degrees hot when it reaches the Earth and just evaporates whatever it touches. It says in verse 11 that the name of the star is called Wormwood. And Wormwood is rather interesting because we see in Exodus 7 and 21, passage in Exodus, we'll see where they come to a place called Marah. The reason it's called Marah is because they've gone for 3 days into the wilderness. And as they've gone 3 days into the wilderness, there's been no water. They finally come across water, and it's bitter, and it's noxious, and it's deadly, and they can't drink it. So, of course, the first thing they did was call a prayer meeting, right? No, they didn't. The first thing they did was they grumbled. And Moses started to realize what he was in for with these people. And God said to Moses, see that tree over there, Moses, throw that tree in and the water will become sweet and potable. And Moses threw the tree in and it was so. The interesting thing about Marah, the word Marah, the Hebrew word Marah, is translated exactly the same as the Greek word for wormwood. It means exactly the same thing, bitter and noxious. And here we are here. God has turned in the trek across the desert. He turned the bitter water into sweet water. And now here in Revelation, as he's judging the earth, he changes the sweet water into bitter, noxious, unpotable, non-potable water. And the name of the star is wormwood, a noxious herb, as it's known. The symbol wormwood, everywhere you see the word wormwood, it's a symbol of divine judgment. And then we get to verse 12, and it says, and the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened and the day shone not for a third part of it. Darkness is in view here, and darkness is always a picture of God's judgment. The Jews were familiar with being told they would be cast into outer darkness, where a place where there's no coming back from. And it was very extremely fearful for them. You don't have to teach children to be afraid of the dark. It seems to be an innately an innate thing that human beings, you know, don't like the dark by and large. There's only one thing that's good about dark is you can close your eyes and when you open them, it's no longer dark. Here we have this darkness, this fourth angel. And essentially, I think what we see here, I think the best way to interpret and understand this is the intensity of light from the heavens. God shuts it down by a third. Now, the significance of that, you know, we have these little Twitter bugs all running around, flapping their tongues and talking nonsense about climate change and the earth is heating up and the oceans are rising. Well, I just need to wait for this to happen, because what's going to happen here is as soon as you take away the amount of light and dark on the earth, is the actual combination of that is actually very critical to the balance, particularly in agriculture. And what we're going to see here is you're going to take away a third of that intensity of light, and there's going to be darkness. Once again, in Exodus 10 and 21, when Pharaoh refused to let them go, he said to Moses, you go and tell Pharaoh, I'm going to bring darkness on the land. And that's a fierce judgment of God. People were deathly afraid of the darkness, and God brought darkness. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face. I remember when I was a kid, I went on a school trip and we went down to Tassie and we went to Port Arthur, and they gave us a tour of the old Port Arthur and took us to this cell. And this particular cell, when they shut the door, was pitch black. It was absolutely, completely devoid of light. And although you could actually feel the person standing next to you, you could put your hand 6 inches in front of your face, you couldn't see it. It's the thickest darkness. It's like everybody wanted the light on real quick. Nobody really wanted to tolerate that. I don't know how any prisoner could have stayed in that cell. And that's the sort of darkness that is being spoken of here. So that's a symbol of judgment. It was a judgment on Pharaoh and his crowd, and we see that this same judgment taking place here. And you notice from this that what will happen, the result of this would be a catastrophic drop in temperature. There just simply wouldn't be enough sunlight to produce growth. What would that ultimately lead to? Hunger would lead to a lack of food and hunger. And when we go back and look at the seal judgments, the first four of the seal judgments are the riders on horses and the rider on the pale horse. If you remember that guy in chapter 6, he is a picture. He has the scales in his hands. Now I'm getting tangled up here, whether that was him or the black guy. One of them has scales in his hands, and he says, you can only have a very small amount of barley and don't touch the oil. Don't touch the oil or the wine. And there's going to be widespread lack of food across the world, and here's the reason why, explained to us in chapter 8, because God's going to shut down the life-giving light that causes the agricultural product to be formed. And so that's all found in chapter 12 when the fourth angel blows his trumpet. Now this is going along, I'm sure, in the eyes of John as well. This is going along at a furious pace, and he's just seeing all these ferocious things being poured out. And you look at these, and there is in the four horsemen, the first one represents war, and then comes death. And then comes deprivation. And then comes pestilence and illness. All of those things are pictured here for us, are detailed here for us. If you don't have enough light, what do you think is going to happen in the balance of microbes, of bacteria and viruses? There'll be pestilence everywhere, and that'll be augmented by the fact that people haven't got food to eat to provide their bodies with what they need to be able to ward it off. And here it all is for us right here. And now there's this sort of pause. So we've seen four angels blowing their trumpets. And then in verse 13, it says, and I beheld. Now these three words, and I beheld, means he's seeing something new. He's seen the first four of these trumpets peeled off, and now God's showing him something new. And he says, and I beheld, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven. Here, in the middle of all this outpouring of the wrath of God, comes this angel flying through the midst of heaven and interrupting the trumpet judgments. And there's a pause. And this angel is yelling out with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels which are yet to sound. Let me try to put that into real simple English for you. All this stuff is going on. This angel comes tearing across the heavens, and there's a pause, it all stops, and he says, let me tell you, people on the earth, if you think that was bad, you wait till the next three trumpets are opened. That's what he's saying. Woe, woe, and woe to you by reason of what you're going to see when the next three angels blow their trumpets. This is a divine warning of the three trumpets which are yet to come. It's hectic, isn't it? So, we've pretty much run out of time. Has anybody got a question you'd like to fire off about chapters 6, 7, or 8?